began so long ago with a band of Queen's Park men.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Spiders Talk podcast. David Blair, Enzo Tamarini and Callum Stewart back with you again this week. Starting to become back against their wishes as this run of really poor results continues. We are now out of the SPFL Trust Trophy following a 1-0 defeat away to Falkirk, but 1-0 really doesn't tell the story of the game there. We will, of course, talk about that very, very shortly. News roundup, including potentially big news that broke last week as we were hitting publish on our last episode, which we, of course, never got to cover, where there was all these rumours about Marijn Bjuker potentially being tapped up by Ajax back in his native Netherlands. And we will look ahead to this Friday, not Saturday this week, Friday, against Airdrie on BBC Scotland, live on the telly. And as part of that build-up, we've spoke to Colin Telford from the Airdrie Fans podcast, Only the Lonely. Callum and Enzo sat down with him, so we'll have that for you as well. Boys, we're going to obviously go back straight into the Falkirk game. Let's get it out of the way as quickly as possible. The two of you were there. I'll go through the lineup in a second, as we always do, but Enzo, come to you first. Just your initial, we're a few days past now, but your thoughts on that game, how it went, and obviously compared to what you were expecting.
I don't really know what I was expecting. I think when we were on the way to the game, I did say to Callum that I had a feeling that there maybe was a bit more of a gulf between the two divisions than what people expected, and that we, despite the run of form that we're on, we probably would go there and get a result. I didn't think it was necessarily going to be an easy game. I didn't think it was going to be a particularly one-sided game at all, but I thought we had it in us to go there and get a result, and it couldn't have really started much worse, with us giving away a really, really stupid penalty pretty much immediately. And then it just didn't really get much better. All I can say at this point is thank God for Callum Ferry, because he was utterly phenomenal. He kept us in that, and without him, it would have probably been embarrassing, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about optimism. You did predict us to win 6-0, Enzo, in the predictions last week.
But so that was a joke.
that was so bad. It was just so bad once again. I think that one actually, maybe, I don't know, there's so many to choose from now, but I think that might have been the worst one of the season for me. It was utterly brutal. Just straight from kickoff, we just capitulated, and it was a really, really tough watch. As Enzo mentioned, the only shining light in that entire game was Callum Ferry, who was outstanding. But we'll cover that in more detail as we relive that turgid experience once again.
Yeah, it was a tough watch for you guys there. I wasn't at the game, but with it being the international break, BBC Scotland, BBC Radio Scotland had it as their commentary game, so it was a tough listen for me. It didn't start great at all, did it? But let's do the lineup and say, obviously, just before kickoff, let's run through that. So it was Callum Ferry in goals. Now, you guys can perhaps tell me exactly how we lined up. But I believe, was it Lucas McCormick at right back, or was it Louis Longridge?
Longridge at right back.
It was Longridge at right back. So it was Longridge at right back. He had Alex Bannon, Charlie Fox coming in place of Will Tizard, who started last week. He was injured during the week, but we believe he'll be back next week. So Fox in for Tizard, and Tommy Robson at left back. You then had the midfield three of Jack Spong, Jack Thompson, well, and then Lucas McCormick in the middle, or was this a 4-4-2? It was Lucas McCormick as well, and our usual front three, Thomas, Payton, Hepburn. As I say, Callum, how exactly was that lined up? How did that formation kind of look for the first half of the game, certainly, because did it perhaps change at all?
You had, Enzo, correct me if I'm wrong, it was McCormick out in the left, wasn't it? And then it was Dom Thomas out the right, Payton in the middle, and then your midfield. No, wait, is that right?
No, Thomas was playing through the middle, unfortunately, which is a mistake that we've seen quite a few times.
Aye, because I was going to say, Hepburn was out wide on the other wing, wasn't he? Dom Thomas was in the middle. And to no one's surprise, it didn't work. Like, it just didn't work. Dom Thomas, we've tried him several times in the middle. Other clubs have tried him in the middle. It just doesn't work. He's a wide player. And when they did eventually swap him back out wide, he looked good again and he caused a lot of bother. So
mad
that
was, into how when you play how when you play a winger out wide instead of through the middle, he can actually show you what he's capable of doing.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Like now that it's all coming back to me as we start talking about it, there were some absolutely insane sort of movements in the team throughout that game. So you did have Dom Thomas in the middle. He ended up out wide. Obviously, you mentioned Lucas McCormick, who had his, I think that's his first start for us. Unfortunately, yep. I think he struggled. He's obviously still a very young guy, so I'm loath to go too harshly on him, but it was a bit light, and he didn't have the best of games, including missing a really good opportunity one-on-one where he should have just hit it with his left foot, and he tried to hit it with outside of his right, and it didn't really work. And then the maddest thing was when I think it was about 75 minutes, and then we noticed that Charlie Fox was up front. He was playing as a second striker.
I do recall hearing that on the radio, and there was a bit of amusement at the fact that apparently Charlie Fox kept sort of signalling or trying to run backwards, and he kept getting told, no, get back up front.
Aye, 15 minutes, I think it was. He played as a striker, and he ran around like a centre-back who's playing as a striker. We're generally big fans of Charlie Fox as a centre-back, and those marauding runs is what we're here for, but he wasn't a striker, unfortunately. I don't even know what they actually done then, because I think at that point we also had McLeish on and we also had Payton. Was it Payton that they dropped back, Enzo?
I don't think either of them really dropped back much. I think we were just pretty heavy. Yeah, Payton was playing slightly deeper at that point, but I got the impression that none of the guys were really sure what they were trying to do then, like, because it was such a... I don't know if that's something that they've done before in training or if that's something that they really were prepared for going into the game. But I think a few of the forward unit at that point just looked slightly lost, to be honest with you.
Enough about the guys up front for now. What about at the back? You've already mentioned Callum Ferry. I think everybody's well aware of the level of performance that he put in against Falkirk, which was pretty fantastic. I think he even got a hand on the penalty as well, didn't he? Which was given away, was that 5 minutes in? And even by that point, I think he'd already had one other save to make. And then shortly after that, that was that pretty horrific back pass that he was given that he had to kind of scissor kick away from going into the corner of the net again itself. A number of saves throughout the first half in particular. It was Colin Hendry was one of the guys on the radio. I can't remember who else it was. But they were absolutely singing his praises. I mean, you go back and you look at the highlights, not just the first half, the second half again. It's no surprise that it was a clean sweep. Or in fact, it was apart from one vote, I believe, on the supporters bus for the end of the match. I think it's fair to say that it's pretty obvious it'll be a clean sweep of the player of the match for ourselves as well.
Let's not even do that. We can give it to him straight away. We know for a fact that he's going to get man of the match for us. So let's just put that out there immediately. There was one person on the supporters bus voted for, I believe, Thompson, I think, got that. And then 39 other people voted for Callum Ferry, who was rightfully deemed to be the best player on the park. He really was. It wasn't even close. He made fantastic save after fantastic save. It's obviously concerning that he was put in the position where he had to make so many saves. But for me, I believe that last season it was the right decision for him to be in the Championship Team of the Year. And I still think he's probably the best shot stopper in this whole division, to be honest with you. So we're very fortunate that we do have a couple of really, really good goalkeepers, especially with obviously McKenna having taken a bit of a knock a couple of weeks ago, and it looks as though he's going to be out for a while. There are a few other positions where if that happens, we're going to struggle. Fortunately, goalkeeper isn't one of them.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what Veldman does, because like massive, massive credit to Ferry, because since he's, it must have been very, very strange for him after getting those sort of accolades at the end of last season, going into this year, and then suddenly he's put out of the team by a 16-year-old. I mean, obviously, we've raved about McKenna equally, and it's a very tough decision on a week-on-week basis, I'd imagine, for Veldman. But for Ferry to come back in and... I think he has just performed well. I mean, that game, obviously, he was top of his game. He's going to give him a choice now, because it's... I don't think it's clear-cut, obviously. I still think McKenna's got the edge if you're going for the old pass out for the back philosophy, but to my mind, Ferry's not really put a foot wrong since he's came back in, and it must take quite a lot mentally to do that and sort of get yourself up for it again after having the disappointment of being out of the team. But, and on that, on you going, Joe.
No, I was just going to say, the thing is, like, obviously, you know, we've all probably had the odd kind of conversation with Ferry, or at least we've been in a room and heard him speaking, and you can tell that he is a total professional, and I think he probably did just take that in his stride. He knew that he just had to keep working hard, because eventually he would get that opportunity to prove that he does deserve to be the starting goalkeeper, and he's absolutely grasped it.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, since he's came back in, he first came back in up at Tannadice, didn't he, for the Dundee United away game. I mean, okay, he had to pick the ball at the net four times, but like, he literally had nothing he could do there. You know, for those of us that were there, we know how we're performing defensively, which we'll talk about again in a second. But then obviously he kept a clean sheet against Morton, which did include that really good save with his feet from Muirhead, I'm sure it was. And, well, against Falkirk, we've seen there was maybe at least four very acrobatic and very impressive saves. He's unfortunate not to keep the penalty out as well very early on. He's been absolutely fantastic since he came back in. And, you know, we've all said about it, especially Enzo, you know, said that ever since he's came back into the team, he's shown that, you know, he's just as good as Cal McKenna obviously has already shown he can be, and obviously promises to be in the future, where we are incredibly fortunate that we have. Is it a reach? Is it, or like anything like that, to say that the two of them could well be two of the best goalkeepers in the league, and we're actually very fortunate we've got both of them. And again, got to echo your comments that, you know, there's a few other positions in this squad where if we lose the current number one, you're really struggling to see where you've got a number two. Yeah, with Callum Ferry and Cal McKenna, it's a great combination to have, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. It's not a stretch at all to say that. I think I think there probably are some other talented keepers in this division. That Albinson is a good goalie. I'm struggling for the other names at this point, because I don't think any of them have really had to impress as much this season because of our lack of threat, I suppose, or because we've been so specific about the shots that we want to take, and that when we are shooting, it's almost only when we're really confident the ball's going to hit the back of the net. But I think we're really kind of lucky in that position. It's just they're not the issue, and there are other issues throughout the squad.
Yeah, it's damage limitation, isn't it? Because even just in watching back the highlights, I had a wee count, and it was, I think I got to seven like proper big saves. Even a couple, that includes a couple of them that were offside, but even on the back of that, it's still seven saves that he shouldn't be making. It was far, far too many. He was so exposed that whole game. And even just from the penalty itself, just the lack of awareness from guys and sort of thinking, and it's like a different week and you've got a different player who's off it. I mean, we've commented well about Bannon over the last couple of weeks. And then unfortunately he switches off in the first few minutes of that game and essentially costs us it, since it was the only goal of the game. It's difficult, and there's nothing that McKenna nor Ferry can do if the team is performing like that in front of them. They just don't stand a chance.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Obviously, with the rest of the team then, defensively, you've just mentioned, Callum, that, you know, there was far too many openings for Falkirk and far too many opportunities to shoot. We were lucky that Callum Ferry was absolutely on his game. And then up front, I mean, you know, when you go back and look at the highlights, there were a couple of late chances. I think Barry Hepburn had two, one that he hit the bar. I think that was relatively early on in the second half, but then I think he had another one late on. Dom Thomas had one as well that he maybe would think he would do a little bit better on as well. Where do you guys look at the rest of the teams? Like, sort of what went wrong on Saturday? Was it, again, this case of this? Was it just sloppiness all over the park? Was it we've complained about sort of like the speed of the build-up and we think it should be a little bit quicker or something? Like, what kind of went wrong? Well, what went wrong? We know what did, but...
Yeah, I mean, at the back, I think we were sloppy. I think we just made it too easy for them, and the defence probably wasn't good enough. The defence other than Callum Ferry, obviously, and we let them through on goal just far too many times. Going forward, though, I don't think it was necessarily sloppy. I just think we looked really timid in attack, and it's like it's almost as if they're determined to hold on to the ball for as long as possible, and we're were so reluctant to take men on and put a ball in, despite the fact that we have arguably, I mean, when you look at the players that we've got up front, Thomas, Peyton, Hepburn, and soon to be McKinstry coming in as well, like, that is a very, very talented attacking group of players. But you kind of get away with hanging on to the ball for the length of time that we do, because you'll inevitably just give it away. And it's incredibly frustrating, because it's the lack of urgency. We just look so passive in possession, and it's pretty infuriating to watch.
Yeah, I mean, you think of the first few games of the season, and we had this really good press on, which was what the team was going to be advertised on, I think, wasn't it? It was like a high press, high energy team. And we've just totally stopped it. Like, we don't press. Yet, whenever teams put the press on us, it feels like they've got three players to our one, and they're left on their own every single time. And you sort of touched on the forward issues. I don't disagree with that at all. And then on the defensive side of it, it was abysmal. Like, you had the right side of our pitch, I think it was, is it Lowell for Falkirk, their number 21, who absolutely done us for goodness knows how many times. I think he was the one that won the penalty after he brushed off Longridge. Longridge goes in for a shoulder tackle, and then Bannon steps up, he hesitates, and then he just takes him down. And then there's just a series of like mad heads gone moments off the back of it. Jack Spong had two of them. You commented on it, David. The one where he passes it back to Ferry, and he's passing it like, I don't know, neck height. So Ferry has to do some acrobatics to get rid of it. Then there's another one where there's a bit of a scramble in the box, and it comes to Spong, and he then goes to like header it back to Ferry, except he presents it right to the Falkirk player as well. It was just painful. And then, I mean, just to add on that as well, I'm just thinking they're all coming to my head like a nightmare. Bannon gets caught in the ball at one point, and then I think it's Lowell again. He then gets a one-on-one with Ferry, and Ferry saves it. And it's just all these individual mistakes. And I can't quite understand why it keeps happening, because a lot of the time when this happens in teams, you think, okay, it's player X or it's player Y, right? Like, I don't want to demonize a guy, but if you think back to Eze, right, he was pretty prone to a glaringly obvious error, and he ended up out the squad, right, for the majority of the season. But it is genuinely with this team right now, it's a different week and it's a different person. And for me, that suggests that there's just something fundamentally wrong with how the team's set up, or whether it's a mindset. But whatever it is, Velman is going to need to figure it out pronto, because it can't keep going on like this. I mean, we need to put the context that wasn't, I know Falkirk are doing well this season, but I mean, they could have genuinely scored four or five goals in that game, and we are a division above them. It's nuts.
I think there's just like, to me, it looks as though there's a distinct lack of confidence, to be honest with you, which is really, really weird. Like, when you have such a young and talented group of players, that should be the last issue that you face. They should feel as though they can go out and achieve anything. I mean, a lot of these guys are at the very early stages of their career, and they've got so much to prove, and they want to go on and achieve things in the game. But to me, they just look as though they're totally uninspired, and that's not good.
Oh, wait, one more thing for me to rant about whilst it's on my head. You mentioned the attacking woes, Enzo. I swear to God, get these guys on a training pitch crossing a ball, please. Just continuously do that for 3 or 4 days. I just cannot understand.
Like, non-stop without getting any sleep or water or food or anything like that.
Absolutely nothing until they manage to beat the first man and get it to a player that is in our colours, because honest to God, it blew my mind the amount of times that we got ball, because we did have possession, we did get up the pitch, but the amount of times that we got to the byline or to the edge of the box and we're whipping crosses in and they're going about 2 miles an hour across the ground or just straight into the goalie's hands, it blows my mind.
And that sums up?
I did notice a couple of times on the highlights that there was, even like later into the second half, you see a Falkirk cross and they've got like four or five bodies in, and you could tell we're panicking to defend, and then it would cut to a Queen's Park chance where we've got possession up the end of the field we want to be at, and there's like two guys there and it seems like there's just so much more space and it's an awful lot slower. I would agree with that. I didn't see the game, but yeah, I would certainly agree with that based on what I've seen this season. Last thing just about the game, obviously 1-0 defeat, out the Diddy Cup. It's a Diddy Cup now that we're out of it, so that's fine. Obviously, Rory Payton's interview, Andrew, you kind of mentioned about maybe lacking confidence. I found it a little bit reassuring to hear Rory Payton coming out and certainly sounding like, you know, it was a sore one to take, and, you know, he was kind of saying the right things, but he was saying things like, you know, they're obviously not playing at the level that they were to start the season. And he also mentioned about, you know, not taking the chances, not scoring the goals like they were earlier on. And he also referenced, you know, they've got all these good players and it's just not working. Is that lack of confidence? Is that perhaps pointing elsewhere? Is that like how we're setting out? What did you make of Payton's comments?
Yeah, I thought it was a very honest interview. You could tell that he's disappointed. You could, like, in himself, and I suppose in the wider team. I don't think you can really blame him too much. I don't feel as though he's really had the service. I mean, when you consider how poor we've been for a while and how much we've struggled to get the ball to him in really good areas, the fact that he's scored, what, 9 goals in all competitions already at this stage just proves that what he's capable of. And if we can improve in that area, he'll continue to score and he'll score plenty more. I don't know. I think it's just, I feel as though at this point, honestly, the system is being forced when it's clearly not working, and the fact that it's then not working is what's resulted in what looks like a serious lack of confidence from the players to me. And unless something changes, I don't see, I understand this idea of you learn the system and yes, you'll have some woes at the start and yes, you'll maybe start slowly. But the problem is there are absolutely no signs of improvement. I mean, we started well and then just fell off a cliff and there's regression every single week, arguably. And the lack of, like, I wouldn't be happy if we'd lost all of these games, but we could come out and say, right, okay, that was slightly better than the last week, that, you know, that was slightly better than 2 weeks ago again, and we're just not quite clicking yet. But at least I could almost understand that there is an end goal. But for me, I don't see how this improves without some pretty drastic changes.
Yeah, it's I think that's a fair summary of it on the whole. One bright, well, obviously we talked about Callum Ferry as a bright spot. Another one, I think Lee McLeish, he got about half an hour this game, and I thought he looked all right. He looked pretty lively getting stuck in about it. So maybe that's, I don't know, I'm clutching at straws at this point, but I think he looks like he's going to be a decent player. But again, the team was so disjointed at that point. We were all over the place in terms of formation and stuff like that. He didn't really manage to make the most of it. But yeah, it's a big job on his hands from Veldman's perspective to try and sort this out over the next few weeks, because there just isn't an easy run of fixtures at any point. It's just going to continue to get harder. So yeah, I don't really know what he does.
Yeah, I suppose all we can do is wait and see, obviously starting with this Friday. That'll do that game. Let's get that done. Normally we'd then go on and round up the scores and the rest of the competition, but as I say, we're out the cup, so who cares? Let's move on to some positive news. Start our wee news roundup. Let's, of course, do that. Let's talk about Scotland for a couple of minutes, because, of course, Scotland have now qualified for Euro 2024, despite not even playing on Sunday. The 1-0 win for Spain over Norway was enough for Scotland to secure automatic qualification. I was about to say automatic promotion. Automatic qualification to the tournament in Germany next summer, which is absolutely delightful. I'm buzzing. I've already booked up to go for at least a week out in Germany to start the tournament. I'll see if I can squeeze out a few more days, who knows, but at least, you know, it's great. You know, there was years gone by when we've been supporting Queen's Park and you used to look forward to the daft away trips and the brief moments of joy there because Scotland were so miserable. Thank God we've got Scotland to brighten us up after a terrible run of form for Queen's Park.
I'd go a little bit more specific and say thank God we've got Scott McTominay to score all the goals for Scotland and then put us in this position, because he's just turned into the best player in the world over the past few months. He's even doing it for Man United as well. The guy's
that,
just
that
class.
VAR, man, that VAR decision
was so bad.
Horrific, so bad the way that they mishandled it, and such a shame because what a goal it is, eh?
Do you think they should implement a rule where if a goal's an absolute screamer, they just shouldn't be allowed to look at it with VAR?
I'd implement the rule that VAR gets to fuck, quite frankly, and that's the only way that I can do it. Because
we could talk about that for a long time.
I have hated it ever since it was brought in. I'm not a fan, and you just see that it kills moments like that. You know, you see that it cuts to the Scotland fans in the stand. You know, they've just taken the lead against Spain. We think that's a goal that is going to set us on the way to earn qualification. on our own right at that time for it to be called off 5 minutes later because they're making up fills or making up offsides, whatever the hell it was they were doing. But yeah, Scotland qualify for the Euros. Are you guys going to look to try and get out, or are you just going to enjoy it in Scotland, do you think?
I'd love to go out. I just need to try and figure out what's realistic. I mean, yeah, because we don't know where we're going to be yet, do we?
No. It's a bit of a gamble. It's obviously, the great thing is you can get about Germany, the trains, and they're I think they're going to be doing like a promotion thing. If you've got match tickets or whatever, it will be like either free or like heavily discounted.
No ScotRail
public
there.
Transport, but I know. Hi, ScotRail could learn a thing or two for German trains for sure. But yeah, no, I don't really know where we're going yet. I've booked up to base myself in Dusseldorf on the west of Germany, because there's like three or four cities like very close together there. So as long as we're not drawn in a group where I think it's Leipzig and Munich, and I'm sure there's another city over the other side. I can't remember.
Stuttgart's pretty far south as well, isn't it?
It's maybe Stuttgart I'm thinking of. But yeah, there's a cluster of them quite close to the west, so that's where I think a lot of us will be going and basing ourselves. You can kind of travel about there. But absolutely brilliant to see. And did you see the videos, the Scotland fans in, where was it they were last night? What was the
Leo?
They were in a bar last night. Was it last night or 2 nights ago? Singing Celebrate with fans. I'm not even sure if it was back in Scotland. I don't know if that's right. But,
all right, okay.
There was definitely a couple of videos around them doing the rounds on social media, just clearly enjoying, you know, earning the qualification, earning the right to go to Germany. The second tournament in a row as well, you know. I was about to say
second European championships in a row.
Yeah, it was second tournament. Second tournament, but second one that matters, eh?
I haven't ruled out the possibility of going, but to be honest, I would only really consider it if I managed to get tickets for a game. Like, I get why people like to go and just kind of soak up the atmosphere, but I'm quite, like, if it's, hopefully we'll get a nice summer and you can just sit out in the beer gardens and they've got the big tellies out and stuff, and the atmosphere will still be quite good back home as well. But Germany's a fantastic venue for it. It's exactly what you want when you qualify for a major tournament, because there's so many strange ones these days, like Qatar, and obviously, like, one of the Euros that they've announced is Italy and Turkey, which is bizarre as well because the countries are pretty far apart. Like, in the past, you'd sometimes have European countries share the rights to host a tournament, and it would be, we had Belgium and the Netherlands and Switzerland and Austria, and at least they were right next to each other. But the way they're doing it now, and they're talking about a tournament in the future, it was Spain, Morocco and Argentina or something like that as well. And for me, what you want if you're qualifying for a major tournament, you want it to be in Germany, you want it to be in Spain, Italy, France, but just in the one country that you can get about quite well and ideally not too far from home, I suppose. But it'll be brilliant for everybody that is going.
Yes, it certainly will. And then we can look forward to Euro 2028, which is going to be held in the UK and Ireland, so not too far to travel there.
Scotland are playing tonight as well, aren't they?
This is friendly against France.
Friendly against France, but yeah, Scotland have already qualified, and I believe France have already qualified
they
as
have,
well.
Yeah.
So it's just going to be a total just be pass back.
You don't get proper meaningless ones these days because of the Nations League. That usually takes up most of the friendly space. So it'll be probably a while since we've had one like that.
Aye, but they're playing tonight as well. But yeah, I think everybody's already got an eye or two ahead to the group draw is the 2nd of December. I'm sure it is. And we'll find out exactly, obviously, who and where will be playing for everybody going to Germany next summer, which will be absolutely fantastic. Move on and look at, well, there's other QP results, as we always do. So today you had Young QP in the Reserve Cup playing Livingston. It was a 0-0 draw, but that then went to penalties, kind of like the League Cup group stage does at the beginning of the season. And QP won 5-3 on penalties, so got the bonus point for winning on penalties there. Well done to them. And at the weekend, you also had Queen's Park Women playing in the SWPL 2 against Boroughmuir Thistle, and it was a 3-0 victory for QP Women. It was Ellie Kane with 2 and Amy Robertson. And that result means that they actually now go top of the league. So Enzo, I mean, when we were saying last week, it was quite close between them and Kilmarnock. Kilmarnock are dropping points elsewhere. So, yeah, great to see them at the top of the table, isn't it?
Yeah, there's still... So the teams in that league all play each other twice, once home and once away. That's the halfway point. Looks as though there's obviously still plenty of football to be played, but it looks as though it is realistically going to be between Queen's Park and Kilmarnock. So that second fixture when the two sides meet again is going to be massive. I believe that's in December at some point. But it was another big win for them, and obviously the way the results around the league went, it's brilliant to see. And if they were to get promoted to the SWPL1, the top level of women's football in the country, I mean, you're really testing yourself against some big sides there. You've obviously got Glasgow City, Celtic, Rangers, who are investing massively in women's football in the country right now, and I'm sure that's exactly where the women want to be. So fingers crossed they can achieve that this season.
That'd be fantastic. It'd be a massive achievement, and the more stuff that we've got to cheer about as a club, definitely the better.
Yeah, absolutely. I've just seen, I think the SWPL just posted it very recently. It's at the top of my timeline right now. You've got the two top goal scorers, or two of the three top goal scorers in the league, sorry. You've got Ellie Kane on 13, St Johnstone player on 7, then you've got Abby Callaghan on 5. So you're always going to be helped with a charge to the league title if you've got the two of the three top goal scorers in the league there. So yeah, fingers crossed they keep going exactly as they are right now. Last bit of news to touch on came out last week, literally as we were finishing recording and uploading our last episode on Spotify and everywhere else, was these stories started coming out that allegedly Ajax were interested in or potentially going to make an approach to Marijn Bucher and try and tempt him back to the Netherlands with a job at Ajax. They're obviously in a little bit of turmoil right now in the Eredivisie. I think they're not like second last or something like that in the league table. They've
places anyway, or relegation, yeah. Playoff places. I'm not entirely sure, yeah, how the structure works there.
I think it is a relegation playoff spot right now, albeit it's only after 6 games, but you certainly don't expect to see Ajax down that end of the table. But yeah, they're in turmoil, and I believe the story comes about because they've brought in Louis van Gaal as some kind of advisory role or some kind of director's role or something. And of course, Louis van Gaal is close to and is very familiar with Marijn Bucher, and it's potentially been a recommendation there. We know that Marijn's obviously in Queen's Park, he's obviously been here, must be approaching 3 years now, or I think it's about 3 years now, it will be this month or maybe next month. He's obviously here long term, implementing, you know, all the changes that we've seen to Queen's Park, you know, behind the scenes with youth football all the way up and everything else. Obviously, that part of that plan is that he's building it for the future, that it is going to become some self-sustaining model, whether it's just developing players and success on the pitch for Queen's Park or selling these players on, of course. If he was to leave right now, is that plan finished? How does that leave Queen's Park? First of all, in terms of you guys, Callum, you first, how nervous does it make you, or does it make you nervous at all, that Marijn Bucher would potentially be tempted away to Ajax? Because it's fair to say it's quite a big call in that, wouldn't it?
Oh yeah, I mean, it would make me very nervous, more so about what happens next than anything else. So obviously the short term element of the footballing side, as far as the first team goes, is very poor right now, and we can all see that. But the whole philosophy at the club, from youth through to the first team, is basically built off of his ideology, and we're pretty early on in that process. I think we're all aware that he's got meant to have a contract where he's here for quite a while, as far as the newspapers are concerned. So if he was leaving, it would leave a massive hole, because it kind of feels like he's been given free rein and is truly trying to sort of impart everything that he wants on this. And I don't feel like the club, from what we can see anyway, is at that point where he could step out and it would just continue. And if it isn't at that point, then what do you do? Do you revamp it? Do you have to find somebody of the same ilk, et cetera, et cetera? So, yeah, I'm not convinced by the rumours overall. I think it might be a convenient mix of names floating about, given his relationship with Van Gaal and whatnot. So I'm hoping that's the case anyway, because it's just turmoil, I think, that the club doesn't need right now. You do want to have that consistency from the football side over a longer period of time, especially through a period like just now, where we're trying to force such a volume of change on the setup of the club and how we operate. So, yeah, I'm hoping it isn't, because I genuinely just don't know what you would do next.
That's fair enough. I think you've pretty much summed it up. I don't know how much truth there is in this. You know what it's like here when anything's going on with Celtic or Rangers, that the media goes into a bit of a frenzy and there's articles left, right and centre and journalists commenting on it, and more often than not it turns out to be absolute nonsense. So can you imagine if Celtic or Rangers were 9th or 10th in the Premiership right now? It would just be, it'd be continuous with names going back and forward, and as I say, more often than not these stories tend not to have much truth to them. There might very well be in this case, who knows. As you say, there is that relationship and connection between Louis van Gaal and Marijn Bucher. Ultimately, the impact that this would have is just totally dependent on how much of his plan he's been able to put in place so far, because the goal isn't for us to be dependent on Bucher forever, and he said as much himself. That wouldn't actually be a very good system at all. You wouldn't really be setting yourself up for the long term if you're dependent on one man who could leave at any moment, and he said this. That's not something that he's shy about admitting. It's a case of what stage are we at, and I hate this word, but you know, the process, the project, whatever, and it's pretty clear that there have been a lot of changes going on behind the scenes with the way the youth football set up, with the way the club trains, the way everything is organized behind the scenes. The problem is we don't really know, and to be honest with you, this isn't something that I feel as though the club should be communicating with us. This is something that they're dealing with, and for the most part, I think they're probably doing a really good job of it. So honestly, the impact and the effect of him leaving is a bit of an unknown at this point. I hope it doesn't happen, though. It would be a lot easier if he just stayed and kept building upon the work he's put in so far. And the thing is as well, you can replace him, absolutely. I'm sure there'll be plenty of other people who'd be keen to fill that role, but would it be someone who necessarily wants to come in and carry on exactly the way Bucher's done it? Not unless we're promoting from within and somebody's already been working with him and knows what the next steps are. I mean, it's certainly interesting, but I hope nothing comes of it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm siding with you guys. I don't want there to be any truth in these rumours. And yeah, I do doubt them a little bit as well. It seemed like a bit of a slow news day, and it seemed like everybody was talking about it when, you know, these kind of reporters don't talk about Queen's Park at all. Obviously, it is just, you know, being linked to, or in some way, shape or form, being linked to a club like Ajax. It's got them to start writing about it. But I think you found that if you looked at a few of these articles, obviously the different papers, whatever, that they popped, papers in inverted quotes, that they popped up in, a lot of them were just copy and pasted. So it's pretty, low effort stuff. So yeah, all of that certainly points to it. But, you know, of course, we did have to talk about it because it may well happen. And you know, as you say, you know, Marijn Bucher, I've got a quote here in front of me is right now where he himself has said, I could die in a couple of months, so there needs to be some kind of continuation at the club. You know, he
is, well, let's hope that doesn't happen.
Well, exactly. No, but that's right. Well, that is also what he says. He hopes it doesn't happen, but that's the thing. He is very open about the fact that he is building something to be working without him. But yeah, are we a little bit early in that stage? I mean, almost certainly from the way I personally see it. And I certainly wouldn't want him to leave right now when there's still plenty of work to be done. But, of course, we'll have to wait and see if anything does indeed come from that. But, yeah, fingers crossed, it does not. That will do for a news roundup. And I suppose it's now time to look ahead to another game of football. Are you guys ready for that?
No. Oh, yes. I mean, I'm ready for it. I just don't necessarily want to.
Right, well, I'll take a wee break here, but we've got a recording. You guys spoke to Colin Telford from the Airdrie Fans podcast, Only the Lonely podcast, and you guys spoke obviously about Queen's Park and Airdrie and everything else in between, because you guys also covered for their podcast as well. So we'll take a wee quick break here, and coming up is Callum and Enzo speaking to Colin Telford.
All right, so we thought we'd do something a wee bit different this week, and Enzo and I are joined by Colin Telford from the OTL podcast. That's Only the Lonely. How are you, Colin?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you guys?
Aye, not bad. Thank you. So the OTL podcast, that's an Airdrie podcast. How long have you been doing that for?
I think we're about 5 seasons in. So there was a fanzine called Only the Lonely, and that was rebooted maybe about 10 years ago. And I listened to loads of football podcasts, including you guys now, and I had just thought it'd be something that we could do more easily and pulling together effectively a whole magazine. So some seasons it's been great fun, other seasons it's been more difficult, but similar to yourselves, just talking with some like-minded fans about what it's like to support Airdrie.
And I think there's not often that much content out there for clubs kind of at our level, so it's good to, sometimes it does take a few fans to come together and put something together. I think fanzines have almost gone extinct at this point, unfortunately, so yeah, everyone seems to be going the way of the way of the podcast now.
But yeah, it's fun to make them, so yeah, it's no chore.
I'm not sure about that. I've certainly found this a bit of a chore. See when you're not winning every week or any weeks, certainly becomes a wee bit more tedious. But no, it's great to have you on to chat about the game. So obviously Queens are playing Airdrie on Friday, classic TV game, I think. So we thought we would get you on just to chat a wee bit about how your season's been going so far. So obviously, Airdrie are incredibly well known to Queens. We've played you many times over the years. I was having a wee look at the stats before the game. It has not been in Queens' favour. So we've only won 3 games out of the last 25, whereas you have won 12, arguably. I mean, I can't have yourself on, Colin, without mentioning the playoff victory, obviously. But you'd have managed to get some retribution the following season by going up through the playoffs yourselves. How was that experience?
Yeah, and you were just on our podcast talking about it. Yeah, difficult. So we'd had an excellent season. We had the main stand full, which very rarely happens. A load of expectation, that beautiful free kick from Reece McCabe early in the game. And then it was a very tough afternoon from there on. Like a tight game, not lots in it, but I felt that Queens probably deserved it. And over the 2 legs, I mean, Simon Murray was just a class act. So that was really difficult. I think that was that our second loss in a row and maybe our 9th successive unsuccessful playoff campaign. So you were starting to worry about whether it would ever go right for Airdrie. And then last year, and you guys had finished 21 points behind us, there was all this kind of sense of injustice you feel as a fan. But then last year, as you say, we did get the retribution and we'd finished behind Falkirk, but managed a really incredible victory against them. And it wasn't comfortable against Accies, but we got there in penalties. I mean, we've had a takeover maybe about 4 years ago now, and they've done really well in terms of just slowly building. And for the club to get promotion was massive. So great relief and a lot of excitement about, I think we were 10 years straight in that league as well. So it's good to have different places to visit, different teams to play, and to give the guys a chance to test themselves at a higher level.
And coming into this season, Colin, what were your sort of expectations? I mean, did you think that, you know, looking back on what we did last season after getting promoted, where we really kicked on, and that does happen from time to time, it tends to be the team that wins the league rather than a playoff winner, but you do see teams getting promoted and having fairly decent seasons the following year. Did you see that and think, okay, maybe we can do all right in this division, or were you more of the mindset of, let's just stay up and build from there?
I mean, I would take it place even now in terms of just, again, given a chance, the club a chance to kind of build and get the increased money in. But yeah, the hope sort of as a football fan is always that you can have a really good season. You'd shown last year that there's not necessarily loads to fear. So the hope was there, but we didn't spend a lot of money over the summer. We're backing young guys. So I was a bit nervous in terms of how would the first few games go. And we're nearly a quarter of the way in. We're doing fine. Concern is it's like a kind of weird league where anyone can beat anyone, and so it'd be great if Inverness or Ayr could be rubbish for the whole year, but there in our last game Ayr beat us, so it just feels like there's going to be drama this whole season through.
Yeah, last year at the bottom of the league you had kind of three teams fighting out for the majority of the season, but this year I don't think we really, not yet, it could potentially be us actually if things don't turn around over the next few weeks, but there's nobody that's a real kind of standout candidate yet of they are going to be one of the bottom two teams, or you know, two of these three teams are definitely going to finish in the bottom two positions. So it does mean that anybody who goes on a poor run could really find themselves a wee bit adrift, and that's, you know, that's probably our concern at this point, I suppose, and that's why we feel as though we need a bit of a turnaround as soon as possible, and it could really be anyone. So it's a tight league. Last season was pretty mental, more from the top half upwards. But it's an exciting league to be in, and obviously I'm sure you're enjoying being back at this level of football again.
Definitely, and just like some of the weirdies that come with it. So we've already been to Tamadice and Capello, where we haven't really been for a number of years. We'll be coming to see yourselves at Hampden as well. So it just adds a bit of variety to the season, rather than playing a lot of the same places for an 11th year as it would have been. So yeah, it definitely adds to it.
Sold your mortgage to go to Tannadice already. It's good.
I know.
We were up there a couple of weeks ago as well, and it's not a cheap day out, unfortunately. But we hadn't played, I don't think we'd played Dundee United in the league since the 60s or something ridiculous, and we hadn't played them at all even in the cup since 2002. So it's one of those ones where, like, I'm going to sit and grumble about the price all day, but I'm also still going to go. So they're technically justified in charging that if people are still paying it. But it's not ideal. I still think this level of football, you really shouldn't be charging people more than about 18 quid, but that's just not how it works, unfortunately. Colin, you mentioned Rhys McCabe earlier and how you have a relatively young manager. I was a little bit sceptical about such a young guy coming up and being a player manager as well at this level of football. Talk to me about Rhys McCabe and how he's done so far at the club.
So I think he's done brilliantly. I was nervous as well in terms of, it wasn't long after you guys beat us, Dylan Easton left, who'd been our best player that year. Ian Murray left to go to Raith Rovers, and you're thinking, oh, this could just be like a mass exodus. They gave McCabe the job pretty quickly, and you wondered whether it was almost like the continuity candidate, and they just wanted to keep as many of the players happy. He had no track record to look at and suggest that he would be a success. About this time of the season last year, things weren't looking great, but a few things stand out. He speaks really well, so any post-match interviews, he just comes across as very authentic. He's very clear on how he wants his teams to play, and he also seems to be really good at bringing players on. So like yourselves, we've got a lot of very young players, but I mean, I've seen improvement with all the young players that we've had who have been regular starters over his time with us. So he seems to be able to buy well in terms of, you're signing unknown guys, or this year, like, we've got Loney Murray Aiken, who's in from Hibs, who looks about 12, but has been absolutely fantastic. And it's keeping Rhys McCabe out of the team, really, at the moment. As well as the guy Dean McMaster, who's similarly fresh-faced, but starts every game. He was, we just sold a guy to Crystal Palace who Kelly had released the year before, and McCabe could see something in him. So the two parts of being able to spot a talent, but then being able to get them in the team and performing and improving week on week, his record's been brilliant. I mean, the fact that he's a player manager and we've got a player assistant manager is probably just the half realities of you're just trying to make their budget stretch as far as possible. But I don't think we could have expected any more. They'd outperform Falkirk last year when their budget would be much more than ours was brilliant. And where we're sitting in the league table at the moment, again, he's pound for pound, he's doing incredibly well. So, I think the fans are wholly bought into McCabe ball, as we like to call it.
Have you any concerns about a bigger club potentially looking at him and picking him up? How do you think that would impact Airdrie at this stage?
It would be really difficult. And he was well down the list in terms of the Rangers job, but where you've got like at 25-1, his name was next to Alex McLeish. He's being recognised. I don't know what size a club would take a punt on him. And I don't know if he'd necessarily want to win to a team that's really struggling. But it must be a risk, because we're not that big a club, so it's not like players, you can't really stop a manager moving on. The player registration part's not there, so an opportunity could come up and he might move on. I think he still enjoys playing, which he can do with us and which he wouldn't if he moved on, and it also feels a bit like a free hit. So even if we finished 8th this season, it's still seen as success for him. Whereas if I look at Ian Murray, where he'd done very well at Dumbarton, got the St Mirren job, and then ended up in the wilderness for a few years until he had to rebuild his career back with us. His next move is a very important one. So I think he's switched on enough that he'll not want to jump into anything where he doesn't think the conditions are right, or he doesn't think that he'll get time. But yes, of course it's a risk. I mean, even yourself, if this week's game did go against you and you decided to change, he'd be a good fit for what you're doing. So there's also, anytime a job comes up now, our heart's going to be in our mouth a bit, because it would massively disrupt things. You'd lose one of your best players and the manager, and the fact that one of our best centre halves is the assistant manager and his cousin, the whole thing could be disrupted severely if he did move on.
It's such a fine line at this sort of level of Scottish football, isn't it? Because you talked about him doing really well on the transfer front, and we've seen it with teams. You can start to see it a wee bit this season already. United last season, they had an absolute gem in Depo Akinyemi, and then he's obviously moved on to pastures new, and they've not, at the face of it, they've not quite replaced him with like for like, and suddenly they're starting to struggle down the table a wee bit. You talked about you touched on it briefly, the style of football. Talk to us a wee bit about how Airdrie tend to set up, because I know that yous are kind of similar to ourselves in that you want to play football. You're not a bunch of cloggers, so to speak. How do you expect to set up on Friday, and is there any particular players that we should be looking out for that have impressed you this season?
For us, yeah. So I mean, it'll be a bit like yourself. We'll try and play possession based. I'm not sure he can switch up. It'll either be three at the back with wing backs, or four across the back. A kind of a front three, but actually Callum Gallagher's your most far forward, and then the guys playing next to him can fill in as midfielders or get forward when they can. But we'll be trying to pass. I mean, you've seen the goal was all over Twitter the other week, where it was like a 25 pass move for the winner against Leith Rovers, and that's kind of in a microcosm how Mickey wants to play. Patient, wait for the space. And in terms of key figures to look out for, Adam Frizzell's been excellent for, I think this is his third season with us. So he always catches the eye. Murray can look out for, because as I say, he's on loan from Hibs. He's one of their youngsters who did very well in the European competition, but he seems to be taken to the Championship no problem. And then Callum Gallagher's always interesting to see if he'll pop up with his goals. So he's despite the fact he's the only part-time player that we've got left at the club, he's still our main danger man and the one that wins a lot of matches for us. So I would say, yeah, Frizzell, Aitken and Gallagher would be my ones to watch.
Okay, have you got a prediction for us, Colin?
I don't know. It's hard in this league. I think it'll be tight. I would hope that we could sneak it 2-1, but like I say, I've not seen you guys since that playoff final, other than I did catch some of the games towards the end of the season last year on TV. It could be anything. I think that's the problem, but also the attraction of this league is we thought Ayr were rubbish and then they turned up and beat us. So I'm not going to write you guys off. It could be anything.
No, you never know. You're right.
We thought the same about Ayr, and that didn't end well for us either, unfortunately. Yeah, it should hopefully be a really good game. It's two sides that want to play decent football. We're not necessarily doing too much of that right now, but hopefully that'll turn around to create a wee bit of a spectacle for the TV. And we were talking before, Colin, I think you mentioned that there's a deal on for youngsters going to the game this week.
Yeah, and I should be able to name drop them, but the company that does our ticket and platform have sponsored the game, and I'm sure it's £1 for under 18s. So I mean, check out your Twitter and it will confirm that. But if you're bringing youngsters, if you're slithering about coming to the game and you've got youngsters, then that might make it a lot more attractive and certainly cheaper than a day out in Dundee.
It wouldn't be hard. Thanks a lot for joining us, Colin. Enjoy the game on Friday.
Thank you, guys.
Not too much.
Cheers, Colin.
Cheers.
Thanks, then. Bye.
Bye.
So thanks to Colin from the Only the Lonely podcast for doing that with Calum and Enzo. How did you guys find that, and did it give you any more information about Airdrie that you did or didn't know?
I actually think I don't know why, but speaking to Colin somehow made me feel a little bit more confident about this game. And I'm not, we're not in a situation where any of us should be feeling confident about it. The way he talks about them having a really young team that tries to play football the right way, and obviously being reminded of the fact that they still have a relatively young and experienced manager who, granted, has done well for them so far, makes me think that this might be the game to get back on track. But obviously, when I'm reminded of the past kind of six league games or something like that, then I remember that it's going to take more than the other team playing like that and lacking experience. It's going to take us to actually show up for a change. So I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm necessarily like more confident off the back of speaking to Colin, but it was an interesting chat just hearing about how he thought Airdrie were going to set up this season. I think from what he was saying, it was a bit of a surprise that they didn't make more sort of named signings, I think, perhaps, and they went for the young team approach as have we, but they seem to be faring, I guess, marginally better than we are. I think it probably feels a bit different for them because they seem to be winning, losing, whereas we've been on a sort of horrible downward trajectory for a longer period of time now. But I don't know. I feel like if we are playing a team like that who is perhaps a wee bit more or less experienced at that style of football, or maybe not quite as good as some of the other teams in the league who try it, then we stand a better chance in that sort of game than we do against 10 men behind the ball. We're going to be resolute and not do anything else, sort of Morton style. So yeah, I'm trying to convince myself that I have that I've got some sort of positivity towards this game, but I'm still struggling.
Yeah, I won't help you here. A quick recap of the league table, just where both teams sit. You have Airdrie are currently in fifth place. They've won four and lost four of their eight games so far this season. Recent form, loss, loss, win, win, loss. So yeah, as you say, Callum, they're kind of back and forth. Whereas for Queen's Park, we are only 2 points behind them. However, we have played a game more. With three wins, five defeats and the one draw, giving us 10 points right now. So I'd say 2 points behind them, and well, our most recent form, as I say, need I remind you, in the league. Last six games, it's been five losses, and then that last 0-0 draw against Morton. And obviously,
Airdrie don't score much, though. That's something that you can take from that, I guess. Because I think, what is it, like eight goals or something like that?
I looked at it earlier. Goals scored eight, goals conceded 12. So, yeah, they don't score an awful lot, but, you know, their defence is a wee bit tighter than ours. I mean, even though those two games that they did win back-to-back, 2-1-0 wins over Morton and Raith. So, they've done something that we've not managed to do this season. I don't know if I take a lot of hope from that, to be perfectly honest. I didn't get the chance to speak to Colin myself, but I'm afraid I can't take myself away from looking at the recent form. And it just really, I think I've thought two or three times in the last 6 weeks, right, here's the get right game, here we go, this is the one we'll go, and it just hasn't been. And I look at Airdrie, away to that stadium, and rubbishy AstroTurf pitch, because that is a rubbish one. On the telly again as well, we had did we not have a pretty terrible run of form on the TV games last year as well?
Also on the Friday nights, by the way, in general, because we played a lot of Friday night games that weren't on the telly just because of the ground sharing situation, and our record wasn't good. So do you know, the thing for me is, see when most teams are on a poor run of form, right? Fans go into games going, right, this is where it turns around. But I feel as though there's this kind of feeling among our support right now where there is no sense of one win and it gets better. I think everybody just is feeling all doom and gloom about it. But I think that would change with one win. I don't know. We'll see. I think this is as good an opportunity as we're going to get, especially with the fixtures that we have in the coming weeks.
Be interesting to see how he lines up, because Bong, by the looks of it, obviously he got taken off with an injury in that game. He subbed Thompson at half-time. I don't think we're clear on whether that was a tactical thing he brought Jarrett on, or whether that was another injury, because I actually thought Thompson was fine in the first half. He certainly didn't feel like the problem. So,
but Thompson's been taken off before when he's been playing okay, and it's not necessarily been injury-related. Yeah. I think that's just been poor decision-making, if I'm honest with you.
Yeah, so I'm not sure how he's going to line up. Either way, I would like to see Dom Thomas on the left side of the pitch with Robson, because if I see him in the middle of the pitch, I mean, the time that Dom Thomas has done well this season is when he's been on that left side at the start of the season. So that's one thing I'd be hoping to revert to type on.
Yeah, totally agree.
Yeah, that's always been where he's played best for us, isn't it? It's always been there. So yeah, we need to see him back. And again, we've seen it a number of times when Dom Thomas is on the left, it does help lift Tommy Robson's game a bit. And he has most of his best games when he's paired up with him. So 100% agree with that. Are you making any changes elsewhere? Obviously, you had Fox coming in for Will Tizzard. Alex Bannon, obviously, the mistake for the penalty, but he has played well up until last week. I suppose there is a little bit of a question mark about centre-back. I suppose it's the one position where there's like an obvious rotation option. Who would you be lining up with the starting centre-halves between those three?
If they're all available, I think I'd probably go back with Fox and Tizzard at this point, for no reason other than I think we know that Fox, I know that he struggled at points this season, but we know what he's capable of. And I think Tizzard, whilst possibly a little bit naive at times, I think he's showed that he is a capable defender. And I feel as though, the thing is, everybody in this team has made mistakes this season. I feel as though they are our two best defenders and they just really need to get used to playing together, and that's not going to happen without game time.
Yeah, it's a really difficult one because I think Bannon had earned his place for a wee while, but he really did struggle in the first half of that game against Falkirk, and I could see Veltman being tempted to change that up again. And that's where it's a rotation purely because players are not playing well. It's not a rotation because we've got three guys who are really, really high performing right now, unfortunately. It's kind of like who's going to make the least mistakes. It feels a wee bit like that, as opposed to a sort of positive outlook on it. I think I agree with you. I'd be fine with Tizzard and Fox again. Fox, you just need to make work. He is objectively our best centre-back, and he needs to be playing well because he adds so much to the game. Tizzard, I think he's still got some development, but he looks like he's got all the attributes to perform well, so I'm hoping that he can come back in and perform to the standard that we need it. I'd be going with that. Robson at left back, and I think regardless of whether McKenna's back or not, I'd still be playing Ferry in goals. You can't drop him after that performance.
I think we need a wee bit of a change. I think I want a 4-4-2 against the.
All right, a formation change.
Yeah, I mean, for all that there is a position, I mean, there's plenty of talk about certain positions, but I don't know if it's the shape necessarily, because I mean, Veltman has seemingly tried in game with tinkering with the formation. We've sometimes seen three defenders at the back. We've sometimes seen like a 4-4-2, but and then slightly more advanced wingers, so more like 4-2-2-2. I don't know, but we've seen him kind of tinkering about with things, but I think I'd like a nice simple 4-4-2. Yeah, I think Liam McLeish, I would like to see more of him, and I think every time we see a little bit of him, he's like, you know, he shows he's got a little bit of something. And obviously, he's still young, he's still a raw talent, but he's shown it plenty for young QP. And I don't recall seeing his name in that lineup for young QP when they played today against Livingston. So I wonder if he is being saved for Friday, and I wonder if he could be in line for an expanded role, because you did mention, Callum, he came on against Falkirk and looked lively, which I think was the best compliment we could give anybody from that performance. So I would say if I'm getting the chance, and you know, you're six league games without a win, six league games without a win, give me a 4-4-2. Give me Peyton and McLeish up front. Give me a 4-4-2. Midfield, you're going to have to drop somebody. So assuming that they're both fit after, of course, substitutions and everything, I think it would be Thompson and Spong. Perhaps you're most likely to maybe have me missing Spong if he was obviously substituted early for an injury. Probably, I mean, it's probably got to be Jack Turner that comes in there, doesn't it? But yeah, I think it's not desperation time yet, but I'm starting to approach desperation time.
So, see, I don't necessarily hate the idea of a 4-4-2 and changing the formation a wee bit. The only thing is, and it's mental that we're in this situation, but the only thing is we then have no strikers on the bench. And I know that doesn't necessarily need to be a problem, but that just doesn't sit right with me.
Aye, that's how you end up with Charlie Fox up front.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it could well end up with something like that. Yeah, that's obviously... Maybe something like that might be able to happen. I don't know. Can McKinstry... Well, McKinstry could play... Did he play up through the middle for Motherwell at all? Or was he as a winger?
I think he primarily played as a winger, but I believe he can play through the middle. Cool. And from Bucher's interview when he was signed, it sounded as though that was where we were planning on using him, like almost the way Savory would be playing if he weren't out injured.
Yeah. So, I mean, it could well be maybe if he's available, he could be on the bench. Obviously, that would be a couple of games that he's not been on the bench since he signed. So you'd hope that he's getting up to speed and he's going to be close or perhaps ready now to make an impact for Queen's Park. So maybe if he's available, then you could perhaps facilitate that change. I do agree with you. You know, you don't want to go into a game starting two strikers and having no options on the bench at all. That's not great. But, well, that's obviously just down to, I suppose, what happened during the summer. But I suppose that'll do that for what we want to see at the game. Let's talk about score predictions. Callum, you get the honour to go first once again.
Okay. Obviously, no points for anybody last week because we didn't score or anything like that. I am going to go for just a very tetchy 1-0 Queens. And I will take Peyton as the first goal scorer. David?
It's going to be a stupid TV game, and it could very easily go against us, this scoreline. I'm going to say 4-2 Queen's Park, and I don't really know I don't really know why I'm saying or thinking that, but it's maybe just that blind optimism that, you know, just no matter what, I don't know. Yeah, I'm going with that. First goal scorer, Barry Hepburn, because he did have a couple of chances against Falkirk, probably our best chances of the game. Him to score first. And you'll also have Peyton. I've just vouched for Liam McLeish, so he'll at the very least come on off the bench and score. And give me a fun one. Give me a wee Lewis Longridge goal.
As you touched on earlier, Airdrie don't score that many, so I don't think it's... I know we didn't concede any against Morton, but that game was horrific and it basically doesn't count. I think I'm going to go 2-0 Queens. 2-0, Dom Thomas and then Rory Payne.
Cool. Praying for some points this week.
Yeah.
We really, really need it.
Are you just praying for yourself, Callum, in our standings, or were you praying for Queen's Park?
No, I will take anyone getting points because that means we've at least scored a goal.
Aye. Elsewhere in the championships, obviously we are on Friday night on BBC Scotland with the 19:45 kickoff. But on Saturday you have Arbroath against Raith, Dunfermline Ayr, Morton against Inverness, Partick Thistle, Dundee United, probably looking like the best game of the day there. You guys get any thoughts on those games? We're seeing Inverness sign David Wotherspoon. I know he's spent a wee bit of time out of football, but he was a very solid player for St Johnstone when he was fit and capable. He could be decent in this league.
He could potentially be decent, yeah. It's just going to depend. I don't know how much football he played last season. I know that he was either early last season or the season prior to that, where he had quite a bad injury. But, you know, he's a guy that's made a career out of playing in the top flight with St Johnstone, and I think before that Hibs as well. So it could be a really good player for them. I hope he's not, because that would benefit us. I think the standout game of the day is quite obviously Thistle-Dundee United, isn't it? And I fancy at this point Dundee United will have enough about them just to edge that.
Yeah, I'm predicting Dundee United are going to win and Arbroath are going to beat Raith, and then they will start to break away and we'll never see them again.
I think that's very possible, yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, we'll have a wee look at them next week when we are back. Fingers crossed, this time it will finally be after a Queen's Park win and we get back on track in the league, because, yeah, not only are you looking ahead of where it's going to break away, but if the teams below us currently in the league start to catch up and we continue to lose, yeah, we're going to slip away. And yeah, well, we don't want to talk about that, but we may unfortunately end up having to. Until then, though, Callum and Enzo, it still has been a pleasure, as always. Find us on Twitter at Spiders Talk Pod, and of course, still find us on Pie and Bovril, posting in all the threads relating to Queen's Park. We do thank you if you are back once again to hear our thoughts on another poor game, but as we say, fingers crossed, next time we speak to you, it will be after a win, and we will see you then.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening. Cup final, league match or friendly. The dead are cards of the dandy. Play for the sake of the game. Play for the sake of the game.